From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point.
Mr. President, ready or not, here we come.
Florida Democratic Congresswoman-elect Donna Shalala there. It may not have been a blue tsunami, but the Democrats did flip the House with a wave. Deep divisions over the character and leadership of President Trump drove historic voter turnout for both congressional races and all-important gubernatorial contests as well. But Democratic gains only went so far. Republicans expanded their majority in the Senate and in some high-profile races. Here's a victorious Senator Ted Cruz in Texas.
Now we need to go back to work and keep delivering results, more jobs, more security, more freedom.
This hour on Point, parsing the 2018 midterms and the message you, the voter, wanted to send. And you can join us. Were you surprised by the results? Thrilled? Disappointed? What do you make of the new leadership in your state and in your community? And what do you think the midterm elections mean for the next couple of years for politics in America? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Now, over the course of this hour, we're going to be touching down in states across the country to get the latest election results. But first, let's start in the nation's capital. And joining us from Washington is Kimberly Atkins, Washington Bureau Chief for the Boston Herald. Kim, it's always great to talk to you. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Also with her in the studios of NPR Washington is Nathan Gonzalez, editor and publisher of Inside Elections, a newsletter that provides nonpartisan campaign analysis. Nathan, great to have you back as well.
Yep, thank you.
Okay, so let me first just play a little bit of tape here since we're going to start by talking about the House. Here's Nancy Pelosi, currently House Minority Leader, probably soon to be Speaker of the House again, celebrating the new Democratic majority last night in Washington.
Today is more than about Democrats and Republicans. It's about restoring the Constitution's checks and balances to the Trump administration. It's about stopping the GOP and Mitch McConnell's assaults on Medicare, Medicaid, the Affordable Care Act, and the health care of 130 million Americans living with pre-existing medical conditions.
It's Nancy Pelosi last night in Washington. Kimberly Atkins, let me start with you. I mean, what's your biggest takeaway from the midterm elections? Not a tsunami, as I said, but the Democrats did flip the House pretty decisively.
Yes, the Democrats flipped the House. That the map in the House was in their favor. And just as the Senate map was very difficult for them, at the end of when all the dust clears, it looks like they will have lost a couple of seats in the Senate. This was more or less what was expected in terms of political convention, to the extent that political convention still applies right now in a Trump in a Trump world. But Donald Trump, definitely, I think we can expect him today to take credit for everything that happened in the Senate, to disavow anything that happened in the House is nothing to do with him. But I think what's coming up now is a new reality where you will have Trump versus Pelosi. I mean, if you thought that the fights between President Trump and Senator Elizabeth Warren were tough, look out. You have two very strong personalities, both wielding a great deal of power, going after each other for the next 2 years.
I mean, we're seeing that already because the president this morning tweeted a couple of things. First of all, in all fairness, he says Nancy Pelosi deserves to be chosen Speaker of the House by the Democrats. If they give her a hard time, perhaps we will add some Republican votes, he says. And then in another tweet, the president goes on to say, but if the Democrats think they're going to waste taxpayer money investigating us at the House level, we will be forced to consider investigating them for all the leaks of classified information. Two can play at that game, the president tweets. Nathan Gonzalez, what's your big takeaway?
Well, so it begins. We haven't even sworn in this Congress yet, and we're already bickering. You know, I when I take a step back, I mean, Kimberly's absolutely right that this shouldn't have been a surprise, particularly since, you know, you and I, we had this conversation last week, and this is what we said was going to happen. But I think This is furthering a realignment of this country. I think the blue places got more blue and the red places got more red. You know, for example, if we take a step back and look at the 2016, I know that seems like ancient history, but the Senate map, that was the first election in history where the presidential result lined up with the Senate result. And when we look at what's happened in this election, the gains that Republicans made in the Senate are in states where Donald Trump won. The one place, where they lost was in Nevada. Dean Heller, the only Republican in a Hillary Clinton state. But when you flip that map, as Kimberly was talking about, on the House side, a lot of the gains that Democrats made were in districts that Hillary Clinton won. And so when you push that onto what's happening in Washington, you have fewer members and fewer senators representing kind of opposite partisan districts, and I think there'll be less of an incentive to compromise.
Interesting. Okay, well, Nathan, since you mentioned Nevada, let's go there because that Senate race was a really interesting one. Lots of people watching it. So as Nathan mentioned, Nevada Republican Senator Dean Heller lost his race against Democrat Jackie Rosen last night, and Heller told his supporters during his concession speech that he'd done something he's never done in 9 other elections. He called to congratulate his opponent.
Congratulated on what she did, what her party was able to achieve, not just in my race, but all the way down that ballot. And we've hit a couple of blue waves for a couple of cycles. And as a party, we're going to have to come back together and decide how we're going to go forward in the future.
That's Nevada's Dean Heller. He lost to Democrat Jackie Rosen. She unseated Heller last night to pick up that all-important Senate seat in Nevada, and here's what she said.
Donald Trump said that he was on the ballot in this election. Well, I'm really proud to say Nevada responded accordingly.
That's Jackie Rosen in declaring victory last night in Nevada. And joining us now from Las Vegas is Megan Messerly. She's political reporter for the Nevada Independent. Megan, it's great to have you back.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Okay, so how was it last night? Give us the mood in Nevada following Jackie Rosen's win.
Right, that was the most interesting thing, to see those results come in. And we started to have an inkling of it as soon as results came in from up north, which is Washoe County, which is where Reno is, for folks familiar with Nevada. We saw some early results come in that seemed to be pretty favorable for her. Washoe County is our swing county. It's our purplest county in the state. So seeing early that she was doing well there really boded well for her, and that continued to carry throughout the night once the blue Clark County, which is where Las Vegas is, came in, and ultimately it's about a 5-point victory that she had. It was really an incredible win, actually, because the race was seen as so close throughout the duration of the contest. You mentioned actually before, Dean Heller coming into this race was considered the most vulnerable Republican incumbent senator in a state Hillary Clinton won, like you mentioned. Mm-hmm. So to have him lose, sort of meshes with that. But he ran a pretty, fierce campaign in spite of all that, in spite of what, would have seemingly been disadvantages.
Yeah. And so now Nevada has 2 female senators.
Yep, this is right. So we have Senator Catherine Cortez Masto, who, as folks might remember, won Harry Reid's seat in 2016. She is the first Latina senator. And then now we have Jackie Rosen. Having 2 at the same time is obviously unprecedented in terms of itself, besides the fact that, Dean Heller lost, obviously, and this is his first loss in 28 years in politics.
Yeah. So on the House side, I'm seeing that it's a split between Democrats and Republicans after last night's election.
Right. So the 2 competitive races that we were keeping an eye on here in Nevada were Nevada's 3rd congressional district, which is our swingiest district here in the state. Susie Lee, the Democrat, won by a pretty substantial margin over her Republican opponent, Danny Tarkanian. And Danny Tarkanian had actually run this race in 2016 against Jackie Rosen, now the senator. This is for her vacant seat. So he, unfortunately for him, lost that bid by a pretty sizable margin. And then the other competitive seat, Nevada's 4th congressional district, was won by Stephen Horsford, a former representative of the district, actually. He was going up against another former representative of the district, Republican Crescent Hardy, but ultimately eked out won a pretty substantial victory in that district as well.
Okay. So, when we had you on last, Megan, we were talking about how one of the main things that you were hearing voters asking candidates about was health care, for example. And so now that the votes are in and we know who's going to be representing Nevada, I mean, what do you think, how would you characterize what the biggest message or messages that voters wanted to send are in terms of how they pick their new leaders?
Right. Like you mentioned, health care was a significant theme of the campaign. And actually, Jackie Rosen mentioned that last night pretty significantly in her speech last night. She said, it's the fight that the biggest fight of all, the one that binds each and every one of us. And so she promised to fight for healthcare in the Senate. Obviously, you know, as you mentioned, she's going into a body where her party is in the minority still. So we'll wait to see what battles come. But, you know, at least she's taking this as a sign that Nevadans are, you know, sending this referendum saying that they, you know, this is sort of the future of healthcare they want. They want this democratic future of healthcare and not the Republican future that Dean Heller had presented.
Well, Megan Messerly, political reporter for the Nevada Independent, joining us today from Las Vegas after what I'm sure was a long night, Megan. So thank you so very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
So Kimberly Atkins, let me turn back to you. I mean, what does the Nevada win for Jackie Rosen tell you about? I mean, as Nathan said earlier, we kind of saw what was coming down the line in the Senate, but Rosen's win is significant nevertheless.
It is. I mean, this is a state that went to Hillary Clinton. And I think for the last 2 years, watching Senator Dean Heller was an exercise in how difficult it can be to be a Republican in a blue state or a state that's becoming more blue in a Trump world. And we saw the president himself often poke fun at Dean Heller and say, you know, be careful or I'll campaign against you. And I know that you're vulnerable. It really, we saw him in real time in his job walking a very fine line, trying to, be a Republican, but at the same time, not alienating his base. And I think we're seeing fewer and fewer moderate Republicans and Democrats in the Congress after last night.
Well, we are talking about how to parse the results of the midterm elections. I'm joined today by Kimberly Atkins and Nathan Gonzalez. And when we come back, we'll touch down in Texas. Lots of things happening in the Lone Star State, so stay with us. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about the 2018 midterm elections and trying to parse the message that you, the voters, sent to Washington in terms of the leadership you picked for your state, both at the congressional and the gubernatorial level. Lots to talk about in the governor's races around the country. I'm joined today by Kimberly Atkins. She's Washington bureau chief for the Boston Herald. Nathan Gonzalez is also with us. He's editor and publisher of Inside Elections, which provides nonpartisan campaign analysis. Let's get a couple quick calls here. Ashton is calling from Charleston, South Carolina. Ashton, you're on the air.
Hi, yes. I was just calling because I am a Democrat, and we're very excited in the state of South Carolina because Joe Cunningham flipped the seat for the first time since 1986 in our district.
Beating Katie Arrington. Yeah, by what? Just barely a point here.
Katie Arrington. Yes, in Mark Sanford's district.
Okay, so do you think it's indicative of something bigger, or is it just sort of 2018 pushback against President Trump?
Well, no, I do think it's indicative of something bigger. I will say that the county that I'm in, Charleston, even though this state is pretty deep red, our county did not, Trump was not the winner. So Ted Cruz was the winner in the primaries, and Hillary was the winner in the general election.
Okay.
So I think that we do have an impact on the state as a whole, and we're just excited to see what happens.
Well, Ashton, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Texas now, because there is a lot of excitement and interest in, of course, the highest profile race in Texas, that Senate race between incumbent Senator Ted Cruz and Democratic challenger Beto O'Rourke. Now, Beto O'Rourke did not win. Senator Cruz held on to his seat in Texas, and here he is at his victory rally in Houston.
We saw an assault that was unprecedented. We saw a $100 million race with Hollywood coming in against the state, with the national media coming in against the state, But all the money in the world was no match for the good people of Texas and the hardworking men and women across our state.
That's Republican Senator Ted Cruz in his victory speech last night in Houston. Beto O'Rourke, of course, did not win, but in his concession speech in El Paso, he talked about what he saw as the lasting effects of his campaign.
I love you more than words can express, and that love will persist every single day going forward, making sure that whatever we have created, whatever we have changed, and all of us will decide what that means and how far it goes, that it leads something far greater than what we have today. And then all of us, every single one of us, continue to believe and make possible the greatness of the United States of America.
It's Beto O'Rourke in his concession speech last night in El Paso. And joining us now from Austin, Texas, is Patrick Zvitek, primary political correspondent for the Texas Tribune and editor of The Blast, the Tribune's daily political newsletter. Patrick Zvitek, welcome to On Point.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
So I was really appreciating the Tribune's reporting about this Senate race last night, and it seems to me that what Texans are seeing is, in Beto O'Rourke's loss, are Texas Democrats still seeing a path forward to 2020 somehow?
Yeah, I think that, you know, there were a lot of bright spots for Texas Democrats last night. You know, once you get beyond the fact that Beto O'Rourke lost, I mean, there was a tremendous down ballot effect. The Democrats in Texas picked up two U.S. House, two state Senate seats, and a dozen state House seats, which those on the face of it, those gains may seem a little modest, but in a state like Texas that is so traditionally Republican, those are actually pretty significant gains at those various levels. And so I think that when you look at, the margin that Trump had here in 2016, only 9 points, when you look at the margin that Cruz had last night, less than 3 points as of this morning, you can see how Texas could definitely be on the national radar in 2020.
Okay, so tell me a little bit more about how significant that is, because Texas has been, a Republican stronghold for a long time, but we've been talking for several years about whether or not demographic changes in the state would start making themselves known politically. Is that what you say we may be seeing?
Yeah, I think you're beginning to see, and I'm still going through all of the numbers, obviously, from last night, but the Texas political landscape shifted pretty dramatically last night. You had Beto O'Rourke win Tarrant County, which has long been regarded as the biggest red county in Texas. It's home to Fort Worth, kind of a Republican stronghold, a place that Republicans could usually bank quite a bit of votes. He narrowly won it last night. You also saw him win a number of large suburban counties that, again, have been traditional Republican strongholds. So you've seen that the landscape in Texas shift in that way. And the preliminary numbers that I'm seeing is that he also was able to increase turnout in the border counties, in the predominantly Hispanic South Texas, which, of course, is a key demographic for Texas Democrats going forward.
Yeah, so on those border counties, then, talk to us about the race that Republican Congressman Will Hurd ran. He hung on to his seat last night.
Yeah, of the top three target races in Texas, he was the one who survived, and he is arguably the most battle tested, because his district is kind of the perennial swing district in Texas. For the past few cycles, it was the only congressional race in the general election that was competitive, and he's been able to survive in that district by kind of having this image of independence, not tying himself to Donald Trump in many ways. Being critical of Donald Trump, disagreeing with him on the need for a border wall, which obviously is a big issue in that district. It covers hundreds of miles of the U.S.-Mexico border. He also has talked a lot about finding a permanent solution, a permanent legislative fix for Dreamers. And so he's been able to distance himself from the president while also kind of situating himself pretty authoritatively on the issues that affect that district. And he's also just a hard worker. It's a massive district. Yeah. It takes about 10 hours to drive across it. And it requires someone who is willing to put in the work to represent all those people.
Well, Patrick Zvitek, primary political correspondent for the Texas Tribune, joining us today from Austin. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Nathan Gonzalez. So, Patrick is describing how perhaps Democrats are seeing a little light, even in the loss of Beto O'Rourke in that Senate race there to Ted Cruz. But on the other hand, I mean, there was vast amounts of money, vast amounts of attention and support that O'Rourke was getting nationally in this race, and yet he still lost. So does that not sort of temper the read that we can put in terms of how much Democrats gained, whether it be in actual numbers or enthusiasm in these midterm elections?
Well, I think Texas is a good example that this election, I'm still searching for a metaphor based on very little sleep, but it's a buffet, right? You can you can pick and choose. Each party can pick and choose what they like and sort of walk past and ignore the things that they don't like. In Texas, I think I'm not sure how many Democrats, particularly in Washington, believed that Beto would win. They wanted him to win, but I don't know that they actually thought. But for him to come so close, you know, within a few points was, I think, a little bit agonizing. But to gain those House seats, as Patrick mentioned, is a big deal. You know, the specifically one of those, the 32nd district where Pete Sessions, a Republican congressman, was running for reelection. I think it's kind of remarkable. He was one of the architects of the 2010 Republican takeover as chairman of the NRCC. And he ran unopposed in 2016. And it was that's a good example of it. This cycle, there were multiple credible Democratic candidates running that had to run in a primary, and it ended up the Colin Allred, the Democrat, pulled that off. And then one other quick thing about that Texas 23 race with Will Hurd.
Yeah.
Last night, it was a little bit of a soap opera. I mean, Will Hurd, there was a victory speech. Gina Ortiz Jones conceded. The AP called it. The AP is usually pretty conservative on their race calls, and they had to pull it back as more votes came in, and Gina Ortiz Jones pulled ahead narrowly for a while. And so it was a drama for us political junkies last night.
I feel like there was a lot of drama around the country. And in fact, it's not over yet. I mean, I'm seeing here that an Arizona Secretary of State's office spokesman, so this is over in Arizona, said that approximately 600,000 early ballots have to be counted before the winner of the Arizona Senate race is known. So that is still going on. Kimberly Atkins, there's something else that Patrick Zvitek said that caught my attention. I think it's also part of a broader trend that we saw in these midterms. He was talking about suburban voters and how many of them broke away from President Trump or from Republicans. Do you think that that's something that we saw elsewhere in the country?
Yes, definitely. One area, one bright spot that I think Democrats can walk away with is the fact that they perform pretty well in these suburban districts that have become so important. You look at a lot of the House races where they were able to keep their seats or pick up some. They have a lot of these suburban districts. Suburban women has been a very strong focus in this area. I think it also shows, despite the fact that we focus a lot or people in the press have focused a lot on suburban women, suburban white women in particular, it's worth noting that more black people live in suburbs in the United States than any other area. That's the largest percentage of groups. So this was also represented a motivation of voters of color. So those all lean toward the Democratic side. But at the same time, I think a lot of people, when it comes to Texas and Beto O'Rourke, a lot of people got really sort of dazzled by him and forgot that he was still in Texas. I don't think that Texas was much of a surprise. I think certainly that message that we heard him on the campaign trail is something that Democrats more broadly are going to try to copy. I think we're going to see Democrats moving forward as being more progressive, moving more to the left, talking more about Medicare, talking more about Social Security and other issues, while the Republicans were more likely to dig in even deeper on this immigration issue that sort of served them well in their districts and places that they had strongholds. I think we're going to see that continue as we move forward now to 2020.
You know, Meghna, I heard on election night, the White House, I heard a little bit about sort of a discounting the House and saying, well, we'll get it back in 2020. But for some of these suburban districts, I don't know that they're going to be coming back anytime soon. I think it's akin to 2010 when Republicans gained 63 seats, but they gained a lot of seats in the South that had been moving Republican, but were held by kind of a long-time Democrats. And once those seats flipped, they're not really coming back to the Democratic Party. And so I think it's going to be more difficult than what the White House thinks it is.
Yeah. Well, let's go to Tushar, who's calling from Dayton, Ohio. You're on the air, Tushar.
Hello, Meghna, and hello to your panelists. I just really have two quick comments to make about that Texas race that we all witnessed yesterday. The first one really just goes more towards a missed opportunity that I feel the Republicans had. We saw after the 2012 defeat of Mitt Romney, when the Republicans did their autopsy, they really missed the chance to broaden their coalition with Hispanic voters. These are folks that tend to be predominantly Catholic and very conservative. And instead of courting their vote, Republicans have just kind of demonized them with the whole immigration rhetoric that they use, with the images of illegal crossings and demonizing Mexicans. They could have really shored up a vote, with a reliable conservative vote, with a lot of the growing Hispanic population in the country. And the second point that I'd like to make is that watching Beto O'Rourke's concession speech at the very end of the night, in the early morning hours, it really brought me back to 2004, when Barack Obama, then a nobody, was giving an address to the DNC. You know, the most famous moment of that is, like, we are all Americans. It's not Black America. It's not white America. It's not brown America. We are all Americans. Mm-hmm. And with Beto O'Rourke's concession speech, it really channeled that charisma that I saw in 2004 with Barack Obama. So I think that Democrats would be very remiss if they, just forgot about Beto O'Rourke. He pulled in so much money from different aspects of the country, that these small individual donations really are the evidence to say that he could be a national leader for the Democratic Party moving forward.
Well, Tushar, thank you so much for your call. Kimberly Atkins, let me get your quick take on that, because I think people are saying that, you know, if they may have lost in terms of Beto O'Rourke and Andrew Gillum in Florida, but on the other hand, perhaps there's still new shining lights for the Democratic Party overall.
Yeah, trust me, the Democrats are not going to forget about Beto O'Rourke, and they're not going to forget about Andrew Gillum either, or Stacey Abrams, or anybody else, depending on how that Georgia race turned out. I think your caller is absolutely right. I think this idea, like I said, focusing on health care, focusing on saying no to super PAC money, and this really progressive message is something that is resonating with people. We may not have seen all the results turn out that way last night, but I don't think the Democrats are turning away from that. As for the Latino vote, I think that is an absolute important point to make, not just in places like Texas, but also like Florida. Not only did the Republicans, or President Trump, really set the tone for this, and Republicans really had no choice, and some of them firmly embraced it, this idea of demonizing Latinos in an effort to play up that hardline immigration stance that they thought motivated their base. That not only turned off, that definitely turned off those voters, but also Democrats. One Democrat I was on the phone with last night, a Democratic strategist, who was so angry at the fact that Democrats did not motivate, not just in the last weeks and months, but after the last election, registering Latinos, going to their communities, canvassing, making their pitch to them in a way, particularly after DACA, after Hurricane Maria, and now after this very, very strong message from the president that demonized Latinos. That should have been a big opportunity for Democrats that they did not capitalize on. And the results in Florida and Texas are a result of that, too.
Well, let's talk for a second before we have to take a break here about what happened in Missouri, because Missouri Democrat Claire McCaskill lost her bid for re-election to the Senate. It was a tight race that Democrats thought they might lose, and in fact they did. Here's Claire McCaskill last night.
Obviously, we fell short, and that's disappointing. And not for me, but what I feel the most pain about tonight are all of the people who, for the first times, many of them in their lives, said, "I'm going to do more than just sit on the couch and cuss the TV."
That's Democratic Senator Claire McCaskill in her concession speech last night. She lost to Josh Hawley, a Springfield, Missouri Republican. And last night he thanked President Trump.
"I had a very nice call with the President of the United States. Thank you, Mr. President, for your leadership. Thank you for believing in Missouri. Tonight, the people of Missouri have delivered."
Josh Hawley in Missouri last night. Nathan Gonzalez, we've got about a minute before the break here, but that Missouri race brings my attention to a comment we got from a listener who calls themselves Honesty, who says, "Trump has every reason to be pleased. Nearly every Democratic senator up for election that voted against Kavanaugh lost. The House may have flipped, but it was nothing like what happened to Clinton, George W. Bush, and Obama in their first midterm election." So nowhere, Honesty seeing it as nowhere near the same shellacking, to use Obama's term.
Yeah. in honesty, you know, if we're all being honest with each other, you know, the president was handed a very favorable Senate map. I mean, if you look at they're going to pick up, you know, maybe three or four seats. But the Republicans failed to win Senate seats in states that Donald Trump won. Ohio, Pennsylvania, fell short in Wisconsin, didn't win in Michigan. You know, there were states where the president, where his influence wasn't enough to put Republicans over the top. But again, it's a buffet. Pick what you want, and it'll help you sleep at night.
It's a buffet. It's a Rorschach test. It's whatever you want, but it's American politics in 2018. And when we come back, we're going to touch down in Florida and some unresolved questions there. So we are talking about the midterms and what happened last night, what's going on today, and the message you, the voters, are trying to send to your elected leaders. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're trying to parse the 2018 midterm elections this hour, and I'm joined by Kimberly Atkins and Nathan Gonzalez. Let's go to Florida. Lots of big races in Florida, some still unresolved. But first of all, let's hear a little bit of tape from Florida's Republican Governor Rick Scott. He was in that hard-fought Senate race against Bill Nelson, and he won it. Well, for now, we'll see, by a razor-thin margin. And last night, he said he's ready to move forward.
I didn't go to Tallahassee 8 years ago to be everybody's friend. I'm not going to D.C. to win a popularity contest. I'm going to D.C. to get something done.
That's Rick Scott last night. And I said, for now, because there's news here that Bill Nelson is asking for a recount in that Florida Senate race. So joining us now with the latest is Adam Smith. He's with us from St. Petersburg, Florida, and he's political editor for the Tampa Bay Times, focuses on state and national politics. He's also the creator of the award-winning Florida politics blog, The Buzz. Adam, it's good to have you.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Okay, so what's going on with this Senate race between Bill Nelson and Rick Scott? Is it over yet?
That's a good question. We never know whether elections are over in Florida. That's how we roll down here. But it looks like there's a very good chance it's going to head toward into what they call a machine recount, which is not the old picture of people holding ballots up to the light, but an automatic machine recount, that it could change a little bit. It certainly looks like Rick Scott is the likely senator-elect.
Okay, and as of last night, he had a 0.42% lead over Bill Nelson,
which appears to be heading toward that automatic machine recount. If it gets to be below a 0.25 lead, then we are in a world of hurt where 67 different counties are taking millions of ballots and looking at them individually to see, you know, are there overvotes, undervotes, or something that the machines miss.
You know, I'll give Florida credit for never being boring in any election here. Okay, so we'll see what happens in that Senate race. So let's talk about the gubernatorial race here for a second between DeSantis and Gillum. Last night, Democratic Andrew Gillum, who lost the race, said that even though he was defeated, he'll continue to fight for the ideals he campaigned on.
Are we going to wake up and bask in sorrow and defeat, or are we going to get up and reassert ourselves to the mission at hand? Are we going to get up and fight for the things that we believe in? Are we going to get up and say that we still deserve our seat at the table?
That's Andrew Gillum in his concession speech last night. But Adam Smith, let me ask you, you know, we can talk about what Gillum's loss means for the Democrats, but I want to actually focus on how significant it is for President Trump that Ron DeSantis won the governor's race in Florida.
I mean, you got to say Trump was a giant winner. He came here in the last week, 10 days, two times to two different rallies to rev up the base. And, you know, there's an old assumption in Florida and a lot of other places that the more people turn out, the better the chances for Democrats. Well, we had enormous turnout for a midterm election, and it really benefited the Republicans. They were fired up, and they voted in massive numbers.
And did that surprise you at all? Because, I mean, this was a really divisive race. I mean, Andrew Gillum had that very famous line from one of the debates where he said that regarding Ron DeSantis that, you know, he wasn't saying that DeSantis was racist, but that the racists were saying DeSantis was racist. I mean, that was the tenor of that of the contest there.
I think everybody assumes that every big race in Florida is going to be very, very, very close. But I do know certainly a lot of Republicans thought that they nominated the weaker of the two candidates, that Ron DeSantis was not a ideal general election candidate. And, you know, he was not sort of very inspiring. He didn't talk about a lot of issues. But I think that Trump base really turned out.
Okay. One more thing about what happened last night in Florida. There was a really big question on the ballot for voters regarding restoring voting rights for people with felony convictions in Florida. That passed pretty handily. I mean, this could restore voting rights to more than a million Floridians. So how significant is that?
It's very significant. We're one of a very, very few states that still has this strange system where once you complete your sentences, you have to go through a very, very difficult process to be able to vote again. I've heard one expert describe this as the largest enfranchisement of voters since the Civil Rights Act. So now the question is going to be, how do the state leaders just implement it, and how quickly do they do that?
All right. Well, I'm also seeing here that when it turns out, and when we look at the numbers, we're talking about voting rights potentially for almost 18% of potential black voters in Florida. So Adam Smith joining us from St. Petersburg, Florida, political editor for the Tampa Bay Times. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So Kimberly Atkins, tell us what you're seeing in, you know, this sort of mix of results from Florida, because, you know, in especially that Gillum DeSantis race, I have a comment here on Twitter from someone calling themselves Madge of Honor, who says, unwilling to listen to any election analysis that does not address racism and white supremacy. Is that a factor here?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think one of the factors, and I think one thing that has surprised some people at the result, who are surprised by the results in places like Florida and Georgia are surprised in part because of the very overt racism that was a part of the races in both, particularly both of those gubernatorial races. The fact that could still allow the Republicans to either win or be on the verge of winning in those races was really shocking to some people, not so much to others, because that is a reality in this country, is that racism is the vestiges of racism, particularly in southern states, remains very strong. And I think that is absolutely a factor in what happened there.
Yeah.
But I think the point that you made also in terms of voting rights, we saw two things happening in this election. One is a lot of these races were impacted by gerrymandering and other restrictive voting rules that were put in place, mostly by Republican state legislatures, that had the effect of suppressing the votes of minorities. And I think a lot of the results in these races were affected by that. But at the same time, you see in Florida this major, major change that will enfranchise a lot of people. A lot of people of color, like you said, that 18% factor is real. But in the end of the day, there are more white people in Florida who are affected by this law than black people. So it's going to enfranchise a lot of people. And that is a new area that could make a big difference in a lot of these close races going forward.
Yeah. And, you know, I have to say, I appreciate your answer there, Kimberly, because I want to walk back what I said. Are we surprised that race or racism is a factor? We shouldn't be surprised anymore in America in 2018, but perhaps if one carries any surprise, it's how overt an influence it still can be.
Certainly.
So
certainly.
Nathan Gonzalez, we also saw in Michigan, Michigan voters there passing resolutions actions to make voting in Michigan a lot easier, including automatic voter registration. So it's funny, we're getting all these, you know, as Kimberly pointed out, there's so many mixed signals here. Like we're putting disenfranchisement, gerrymandering, but then on the other hand, sort of an expansion of voting access and voting rights in some places.
Yeah, and I think there are, you know, it depends on geography and the states. It also depends on different who is implementing these. You know, it's a difference between state legislatures or people. It's on the ballot and people are voting for it. But if I could go back to Florida just one second, because I think this is where the loss in the House for Republicans cuts a little deeper, because there was a Republican congressman, Carlos Curbelo, who represents part of South Florida, you know, viewed as a rising star in the Republican Party, who was defeated for re-election by a woman named Debbie Mercosso-Powell. And he's an example of a number of people that Republicans consider to be good members. You know, they do all the right things. Eric Paulson in Minnesota, Mike Kaufman in Colorado, Barbara Comstock in Virginia, Peter Roskam in Illinois. And they all lost re-election. They were all running in tough districts. And it's also an example of where I think we've moved beyond this time where someone can have an individual brand that can cut across partisan lines. And we saw this in the Senate as well. We said, well, North Dakota, Heidi Heitkamp, she's a Democrat, but people know her. She's a fighter. Or Claire McCaskill, people know her. She knows how to win tough races. And you know what? It's about partisanship. Mm. And they didn't match up with the partisanship of their constituents, and they got voted out.
All right. Well, let's take some more calls here. Simon is calling from Canton, Ohio. Simon, you're on the air.
Hi, Magna.
Hi.
I wanted to say Ohio, I think, is a bellwether that it seems like the Democratic Party is not paying attention to, and what I'm hearing from a lot of the analysis. I'm an independent, and I got to tell you that the polls here had Cordray up by 3 to 4 percentage points over DeWine, and DeWine's a very vanilla kind of old establishment Republican candidate. He won by almost 6 points, and the Republicans swept statewide all the offices. And I don't know how they're going to be able to counteract that message, because our economy was destroyed in 2008. And it has really taken off since Trump was elected. And as much as people can't stand the things that he says and a lot of the ways that he behaves, they like having jobs. And they like seeing that we have a more people look, you know, we don't have enough people to fill the jobs that we have open. And that's a hard message to overcome.
Simon, thank you so much for your call. Nathan Gonzalez, what do you have to say about that Ohio race? Because Simon's exactly right. Pollsters were talking about Cordray winning there, but he did not.
Yeah, and he was right that Mike DeWine, I mean, the guy's held every office, he's held political office for 30 years. If you want to label someone as the establishment, I mean, he was it, and he ended up winning. On the other hand, you had Senator Sherrod Brown, a Democrat, who did win re-election, but that race was even closer than we thought it was against what turned out to be kind of a mediocre candidate with Congressman Jim Renacci. I mean, looking back, I wonder if Republicans are kind of kicking themselves for not having a better candidate in Ohio and Pennsylvania, because they might have been able to pick off two more Senate seats. They just had two people who didn't really light the world on fire at all. And Democrats didn't gain any House seats in Ohio. They had a couple of opportunities initially, and those didn't work out either.
Yeah, but Kimberly Atkins, I mean, looking at the Midwest at the gubernatorial level, it's so interesting for Democrats, because they, across the nation, they picked up 7 gubernatorial seats, as far as I can see, thus far, including Michigan, Illinois, and Wisconsin. So you know, what does that tell you for 2020?
First on the issue of the Ohio governor's race, never believe polls. Polls are bad. Pollsters haven't figured it out yet, and they're still working on it. They're getting a little better, but you know that has happened.
Nothing personal, Nathan.
No,
yeah, but that's all right.
It's
another segment.
It's tough. It's in the cell phone age. But back to the point about the Midwest. I caution people to read too much into gubernatorial races, because gubernatorial races are very different than national ones.
Yeah.
And people do like a certain amount of leadership in their state houses and a different kind of leadership in Washington. And so that does not necessarily mean that it's a rejection of Trump in some way. That doesn't mean that there is some major shift. Republicans are still at the head of the game when it comes to issues like the economy, which ring very strongly there. And even though you can say the strength of the economy right now is due to a host of factors, including things that Trump did, including things that President Obama did, including things that the Congress did, at the same time, the party in power benefits from that. And I think you're going to continue to see that in the more national races in places like Michigan and Wisconsin. But these places are still very close. Look, in one of the bluest states ever in Massachusetts, they reelected their Republican governor there. People like different things in their governors than they do in the other candidates.
Although a lot of Massachusetts Republicans, right-wing Republicans, see Governor Charlie Baker as a Republican in name only. That's the view from our backyard here in Massachusetts. But let's go to Gabby, who's calling from Madison, Wisconsin. Gabby, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I'm so excited the way things turned out for Wisconsin. I have renewed hope and faith. I was so scared last night. It was so close with the Walker and Evers and then with Schimmel and AG. So I'm so happy Cole won. I mean, we needed a change in Wisconsin. I'm on Obamacare. I was so scared. Every day was kind of scary, and I was biting all my nails, and it was really super tight. And they still haven't called it, even though 50% is now Evers, 48 Walker. So I'm excited. I have renewed faith. And then Tammy Baldwin pulled through, too, for our Senate. God bless it, because a lot of dark money came into Wisconsin. They were targeting her. They wanted her down, and she fought the odds and got reelected. And I can't be more happier. And it's my birthday, so I'm a great birthday present to myself.
Well, Gabby, thank you for your call. Happy birthday to you as well. And I should just note, by the way, that on Friday, my colleague David Folkenflik is going to be broadcasting On Point from Wisconsin. So looking forward to those shows and visiting Wisconsin as well. Thank you so much for your call, Gabby. I want to just read quickly here some comments from Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and his view of the midterm elections. McConnell saying here, "We had a very good day," says the Senate Majority Leader. He said that at a news conference on Capitol Hill. He says he's proud of what happened in the midterm election. The president has been very helpful to us. McConnell also said that the Kavanaugh hearings were, quote, like an adrenaline shot for GOP senators. And then he said he referred to anticipated Democratic House oversight and possible future investigations or additional investigations into the Trump administration as, quote, presidential harassment. So that's some comments today from Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. One last piece of tape here then on this issue of the next couple of years in Congress. Here's Florida Democrat Donna Shalala. She flipped a House seat to win her congressional race last night. She had a message for President Trump.
This campaign has always been about the American dream, about making sure it's there for everyone. That's what I'm going to work for in Washington. And Mr. President, ready or not, here we come.
Kimberly Atkins, we've got 30 seconds. What do you think what this means for the next couple of years?
Yeah, this is going to be Trump versus Pelosi. Yeah. It's going to be explosive. We're going to see the Democrats wield their subpoena power. We're going to see the president fight back by threatening to weaponize the FBI. It's going to be a bumpy ride. Everyone should buckle up their seatbelts.
Nathan Gonzalez?
Yeah, and Democrats are going to have to decide what they take from these election results and where they want to go as a party. I think there's going to be a big discussion and a fight, both at the presidential primary and in some Senate and House primaries, about what the party stands for and where it should go.
And even House leadership, I think.
Oh, yeah, that's even before, yeah. And that's it's going to be, hopefully it's good for business, at least.
Nathan Gonzalez, editor and publisher of Inside Elections, thanks so much for being with us. And
thank you.
And Kimberly Atkins, Washington bureau chief for the Boston Herald. Always great to have you, Kimberly. Thank you so much.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.